Are you hypnotized right now? It might surprise you to learn that you very well may be. Understanding how trances work will allow you to free your attention from the things that capture it. I'm Sharif Yunus with Dr. Kevin Majors, and this is The Golden Hour. Understanding trances and hypnosis is like a different lens on topics such as work, focus, and flow, which we discuss in great detail in our all-new online masterclass. In this four-week masterclass available on OptimWork.com, Dr. Kevin Majors will guide you through all the key ideas of optimal work with exercises provided to help you master them. Now let's get started. Hey, this is Sharif. We're here with another episode of The Golden Hour. Kevin, good to be here again with you.
Hey, Sharif. Thanks for having me back.
Of course. Well, Kevin, you've been talking a lot lately about this idea of trances. So I think it's very interesting. Now, I think it's something interesting for our audience to hear about. Maybe people have a kind of negative association with trances, like a stage hypnotist kind of inclining you to do certain things, but you're claiming that it has actually broad implications to work and anxiety and other things like that. So I don't know if you want to just jump in and explain kind of what you're thinking on this topic.
Yeah, Sharif, I think that this is another lens to understand how a whole bunch of things work. So I'll see if I can get these ideas across. People may think of being in a trance as something like almost supernatural. It's like some kind of, you know, really bizarre experience that happens. When I've been reading more of the literature in the, I guess you could say, the Ericksonian tradition. Milton Erickson was a famous psychiatrist or psychotherapist who really made a lot of like new ground in terms of understanding how hypnosis works. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to a talk given by the founder and director of the Milton Erickson Institute on anxiety. And it's one of those times where I felt like, wow, this is someone who totally, I think, gets anxiety, but from a completely different framework. And so I've been interested in trying to understand, like, to see how, when people are caught by an anxious thought, or, you know, how do we understand what's going on there? And by reading this stuff, I saw that, in fact, it's a kind of negative trance. That your attention, you get entranced by things that are worrying you, or things in the past you're ruminating about, or any kind of thing that just, when the thought takes hold of your attention and won't let it go, that's actually a trance. So I think that's just a fascinating idea that to be exploring, is how we get entranced, or you could say hypnotized, by these thoughts, although technically it's not hypnosis. I think hypnosis really requires two people. And this is from my own experience of doing it in therapy sessions, that there's something really special that happens, you know, when you're working together I use hypnosis more for doing exposures you can't otherwise do, and you want to just make it more vivid. Really, it's just relaxing and visualizing. But at any rate, that said, it's a new way of thinking about when our attention gets captured, and then it helped us think about how do we get free of it.
Mm-hmm. So in when I think of trance as someone, you know, not necessarily in the field of psychiatry, I think of your attention getting captured, you lose deliberate control. So is that kind of the core thing of what these negative trances are? You're losing control. Are you losing control over your behaviors or your thoughts?
I think that you could say that loss of control is not a necessary part of any, it doesn't really happen in hypnosis. When people are doing hypnosis in a clinical setting, what is happening is completely deliberate. Always, mm-hmm. And it has to be deliberate. And that's kind of the difference between a positive kind of trance and a negative trance. Mm-hmm. Positive trances are deliberately done. So anytime you are putting your attention on one object and staying with it, you're essentially doing what's called a positive trance. So you're getting entranced by this thing. So when people are doing really good work and they're in flow, that kind of flow is like a positive trance, but it's always deliberate. The more negative trance, what happens there is there's a way in which the more you actually resist it, the more powerful it gets, and it's more automatic. So negative trances, you know, I think a good example of a negative trance happens in things like, say, insomnia, where people get entranced by their own wakefulness. And so they're focusing on how awake they are, and they can't get their mind off how awake they are. And as a result, it increases and increases, and they can't think about anything else about that. And then their body responds to this capture, this negative trance, by getting more and more activated. You know, and then they find their heart is racing. You see the power of a trance. You know, and so they can go the entire night not sleeping a wink, purely from the power of a negative trance that gave their bodies this energy to keep them awake. So these kind of cycles, in a way, any panic attacks and other things and anxiety where your attention gets captured and then it intensifies on its own. All of that is like understanding that the more you resist it, the more you're caught by it. Because that's the way these negative trances work. Or even there's like an idea, like anything that someone is worrying about. So that, you know, the more the person tries not to, say you have a person who's afraid that they have some contagious illness or they have a cancer, there's some kind of lump. Oh, what is that? And they start getting worried about it. Well, their attention can get entranced by that. And they get more and more, it's like they keep fixating on it and focusing on it, you know, and then they start feeling things there more intensely and they start having all these experiences just from the power of the negative trance.
So when in our masterclass, we talk in week 3 about attention, and there's a lot of fantastic stuff in there. And we talk about the idea of salience. And that the more salient something becomes, the more kind of power it has over your attention. So
yes.
is there a real difference? Are we giving salience kind of a different name or what's going on here distinct from our discussion of salience?
I think that is like the currency of the trance state is salience. Mm-hmm. So salience is simply a property of an object of attention. That's how magnetically pulling is it for your attention. So when you have total mastery of, say, a complex task, as you're finishing one step, the next step has been made salient by your experience in the past, and you just get pulled to it. So, and then when you finish that, you get pulled to the next, and you get pulled to the next. So what you want in work is that the right next step is what is most salient at that moment. And if it doesn't have a lot of salience when you finish something, then something else that's salient starts to pull your attention. That's what you typically then a distraction is. So then you could think of any powerful distraction as a form of trance, where now you're getting pulled off something, you know, and then the more you, it's like a lot of times when people get tempted by some distraction, what's happening is the more they try resisting it and pushing away and not thinking, then this more and more powerful it gets. So I would say that salience can be passively experienced from things that you have trained yourself to go to in the past. You've made them salient by attending to them in the past. And now you passively feel the pull of something that's salient. But salience can also be deliberately enhanced by deliberately attending to something in the present moment. So the more you go through a task in the right steps, the more salient those steps become through practice. And in a way, then you allow that, that's like, again, the flow in work is really like a positive trance state. And there's neuroscience that I've referred to this before that, you know, in neuroimaging studies, they found that when people are in flow and when people are in a state of hypnosis, the trance, that it looks very similar. So particularly the anterior cingulate cortex is very, it's what coordinates the upper and lower cortexes, that is very highly activated in flow states and in hypnosis. just interesting to see that they're, you know, but both flow and true hypnosis are fully deliberate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you can always choose to move to something else. But with these negative trances, it's harder to choose because the more, if you resist them and you try to break them, the more you fight it, the more it can grow. It's like, you know, you try to get a thought out of your head. You have to then be scanning, is it back? And then it comes back. So mm-hmm. it's like, you know, when people, again, with insomnia, when they're, you know, getting over-focused on being awake in bed, then the more they're checking, am I still awake? Then, of course, they're activated by that. Uh-huh. That's the power of these negative trances. They snag your attention, and they can sometimes, the more you resist, the harder it is to get out. Mm-hmm.
Great. So then what does this idea do for us? Is that's like, does it give us insight? The idea of a trance, does it give us insight into just identifying when we're in particular states and what's good and what's bad? Or does it also give us information about how to get out of these states? So I'm trying to understand mm-hmm. kind of what it adds in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. I think it does both of those things. Yeah. Okay. No, I think you got it. Yeah. So the first thing is that it can be really helpful for people who are struggling with negative emotions to see how those negative emotions really are entrancing, or at least the trigger is entrancing. Mm-hmm. So if someone is getting anxious about something, they respond really powerfully to this idea that, hey, you're getting entranced by it. People who, you know, get really angry, you know, they're actually, in a sense, hypnotized by the objects of their anger. And their thoughts just continually, they get into it. And it feels like a trance. But it's one of the, but again, it's like a involuntary trance. So it alerts us to the fact that the content here isn't what really matters. It's more the process of what's going on. So when people are struggling with anxiety or anger, and when these things get triggered, they can't get it off their mind. I think it's really helpful for them to understand that, hey, I've gotten, my attention has been captured, you know, by this kind of trance. Mm-hmm. And then it tells us what to do, which is you have to dehypnotize yourself.
How do you do that?
I was reading, you know, this Richard Nongard has a book on the 7 most effective methods of self-hypnosis. And he talks about these trance states because people who are really into hypnosis, they see trances everywhere. So, and they think that this question of like, can people be hypnotized is not the right question because we're always getting hypnotized by things. Uh-huh. But he suggests that basically to get out of one of these negative, he doesn't call it, I think it's like the negative trance, but he says when you're basically in this trance, you break it by widening the context in which you're seeing it so that you see it in some more complete and whole and true context. Well, what is that? That's reframing.
Reframing, yeah.
Reframing actually gets you out of the trance state.
Yeah.
And even at the neuroscience level, when you reframe, you're activating the very core of your medial prefrontal cortex. And that's where, you know, it's what you use in your brain when you're deliberately doing something that, you know, it's like it's how you break out of an automated capture is by deliberately reframing something. And so that deliberate reframing does wake up the higher part of the cortex to be able now to counter the trance. So that's the first step. The second step is that you can engage, because he and these people, you know, like the hypnotic writers and tradition, especially following Milton Erickson, you know, they see trance states everywhere. So you can practice a form of a more neutral, deliberate trance. And that stabilizes staying out of it. And that is what mindfulness is. So the second step is mindfulness, that you are bringing you're selectively attending just to something simple in the present moment. And when your attention wanders, you deliberately place it back. Well, that deliberate refocusing and refocusing is how you actually build salience for the present moment itself. Being able to hold yourself in the present moment, because those negative trances are always about something that's, you know, in the past or in the future, or at least generally. You know, that's kind of, they're dominated by your imagination. And it's an object of your imagination that's entrancing you. Rarely it would be something negative right in front of you, because we're actually not exposed to real threats in front of us that often. Now, so if you understand a trance is simply a kind of intense selective attention, then anything that where you're trying to intensify some attention in some selected object is actually hypnotizing yourself. It's in some attenuated sense of what hypnosis is. Focusing yourself completely then on this one object in the present moment. So mindfulness for people who are worried or ruminating or angry is like a counter trance that allows them to stay longer out of the space where they're getting captured. So I think that he doesn't have this, but I think if you can then be engaging a task, you know, that holds a challenge for you, you know, and that in each step of the way, you've laid out in advance this, you know, the kind of challenges you're going to be meeting in this task, that would just secure even further, you know, kind of the positive trance, attaining flow in the end. Because what we're really saying is laying out the steps of a task in advance is like the suggestion part of hypnosis. And you're suggesting to your default mode network, your background attention, where you want to be pulled. So, and that suggestion then makes it easier for your attention to then keep along the right track. So in a sense, you know, the elements of, you know, the having the, your attention focused selectively on one thing, the trance, and then suggestions are all present in positive trances, but they're just very deliberately done. But it does allow us to then stay very well on track in work. Mm-hmm. It's just a different way of thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's very interesting because at the beginning when you were talking about positive trance and negative trance, yeah, it seemed very clear that, okay, the difference between these two things is precisely reframing. So that if a trance is just your attention focusing on something and in the positive trance it's deliberate, well, reframing is how you get into the mode of deliberation. And in a negative trance, you're caught in a vicious cycle, it's like in mm-hmm. anxiety or some other things, then reframing is exactly what helps you to get out of that. So yeah, just very interesting at illustrating again, like the power of reframing. And actually this led me to, it seems to me that a lot of this discussion of trance that we've had so far is being captured by thoughts. Mm-hmm. How do emotions fit into the trance state?
Yeah, it's a great, I think that the negative trance has certain characteristics. One is the capture of attention. Another is a change in the breath. And another is a change in the body. So whenever people get into a negative trance.
I bet you start breathing through your mouth.
Yeah, I'm sure. Exactly. And that is probably entirely right. And you change the pattern of breathing. So, every trance impacts the breath and the body as well. I would say that emotional changes are just changes in the body. You get a tension in the chest. You could have tension in other parts of your body. So when people, you know, if the negative trance is a form of anger, then you respond, you know, the emotion of anger is just the readiness of your body to act according to the emotion. So now you're ready to fight. And with anxiety, now you're ready to flee. Both of those are states of tension, the fight or flight response. So when people go into negative trance, as a rule, they store tension somewhere in the body, you know, and there's usually an attention they're not aware of in the front of the chest. But then there's also change in breathing. If you can dismantle any of those elements, you can also then undo the negative trance. So just making the breathing regular, 4 seconds in, hold for 1 or 2, 4 seconds out, hold for 1 or 2, you're doing something that is dehypnotizing because it's breaking this triad of the capture of attention and breath and body. Also being able to, one very powerful counter trance is progressive muscle relaxation. And the simple way to do it is as you're inhaling and holding a in a breath, you're focusing on the tension in a part of the body. And as you're exhaling, you're letting it go. And usually just go progressively from the forehead to the cheeks, to the jaw, to the tongue and neck and shoulders. And you just work your way down the body. And as you inhale, you can actually deliberately tense it, or you can just kind of attune in to the tension that's already there. And as you exhale, you deliberately relax and let go of it. Now, I don't like talking about this stuff much with anxiety because you don't want people using this to counter anxiety, but it certainly actually does break negative trances. So because there's something like you're unhooking it from its anchor in the body, which is some kind of tension and some change in the breath.
Mm-hmm. And this should give us guidance for dealing with distractions, right? So if you're in the moment of a distraction, if you're working on something and then you just start to feel a pull towards YouTube or social media or checking your phone or whatever, this then gives you guidance on how to deal with that. That you first just look to the breath and just try to center your attention on your breath.
That is a very simple way of breaking any trance. So it could just be the realization that is implicit in what you're saying is that this is an opportunity to practice.
Which is the reframing of the distraction itself.
Exactly. Because if you go into an hour of work dreading getting distracted, you're already setting up the power of the negative trance in advance. Because you're giving, it's kind of producing and highlighting it. So I think you want to be looking forward to the chances you have to renew your focus in the task. And to just let this be an hour of work where you're really practicing intensity of engagement, catching distractions early, and then centering yourself back, maybe momentarily in the breath, getting yourself back, and then back into the task fully. Or just using any moment of distraction to more creatively or intelligently think through just the couple next steps you know you're going to go through. That way you're showing it's again suggesting to yourself, what are the next steps I want to follow? You get those clearly suggested again, and then you dive back in.
Great. So do you typically think about this as more useful for understanding what you earlier referred to as negative trances? Or do you think it's also useful and how to break out of those? Or is it also useful in your mind for thinking, okay, how do I get into a positive trance? How do I self-hypnotize?
Certainly there's more, maybe it's kind of stages of growth. I think first people need to be able to discern when does their attention get captured like this? And what are the things that entrance them? You know, and they are the kind of things that the more they're caught in the struggle thinking about them, then it just gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. Those are then wonderful opportunities to practice de-hypnotizing yourself, which is essentially reframing and mindfulness followed by a new engaging challenge. But it's at that challenge step that you really get into how to form a positive trance. Mm-hmm. And that's laying down an attractive series of steps for your attention to engage in the next hour, the next period of time. And you want to think about how to make it more attractive by having a challenge that's more in the sweet spot. When the challenge level is just right, you end up being able to, it just galvanizes your attention in a much more powerful way. Well, that galvanizing of attention is the formation of a positive trance. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's the trance in which we work. And I think that in that kind of positive understanding, you'll see that good conversations are like that same kind of positive trance. Anytime, in fact, there's time distortion or where you lose track of time, you know, that is a kind of trance state. And if it's something you were deliberately doing and was bringing out mastery and growth and stretch and all these things, then that was a positive trance. Just gives us a new way of thinking of it.
Yeah. When are you not in a trance? Is it only when you're multitasking or watching the clock?
Yeah. I think it's probably, when you're between things. Uh-huh. And you're cogitating in your head, but you haven't yet kind of gotten stuck on something. Mm-hmm. And it's like sometimes when people have a habit of worrying, they'll feel like their mind is ready to get stuck on something. It just hasn't yet. Mm-hmm. And so they know when they wake up at some point, then it gets fixated. It found the thing. And then they're going to focus on it. But I think, again, if they could see that whole process is essentially, there's one skill, getting out of that negative trance, mm-hmm. and then having instead a positive track to be following.
Yeah.
I'm not sure people are going to like the idea of, how can I positively entrance myself today?
Right.
But still, it's a nice way of understanding a phenomenon that we all certainly experience. Our attention getting captured automatically, and then we want to instead have a better deliberate track for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great that it puts the language of salience is about what's going on at a kind of like deeper level in the brain, but then with the trance, you have this subjective experience. You're looking at it from that perspective of how do people experience this? How do you experience salience? So I think it's a very nice way of looking at things. But unfortunately, Kevin, that's all our time for today. I feel like this time really flew by. So I don't know what state I was in, but well, I'll give you any final words, any final thoughts.
Yeah, I think only that I would say love is the ultimate positive trance. So it's when you're doing things you love, or when you're with people you love, and when you're loving, is the experience ultimately of the highest form of trance, where time then flies by, and it's enjoyable. And I add that only so that it kind of completes the picture. We're not just talking about something that has no meaning, but in the end, if you think of trance as a general facet of human experience, the very highest and most meaningful human experiences also share in that, but in a fully deliberate, free, and beautiful way.
Yeah. Well, that's great to end on, because you can think, trance is like a hack or a brain hack. It could very easily be put in that perspective, but putting in the context of love is like, okay, no, this is important. This is real. This is meaningful. Yeah. So I think that
brings out the best in us.
Yeah. I guess that too. Well, Kevin, we'll be back next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sharif.
Well, thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out optimwork.com for a set of online tools to help you engage challenge in your life. See you next week.